Why do I keep doing this to myself? Giving my heart to someone else who can't seem to comprehend and just pretend to love me the way that God loves me. Oh, the way that God loves me. Why do I keep doing this to myself? Giving my heart to someone else who can't seem to comprehend and just pretend to love me the way that God loves me.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me here tonight for this very special evening on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. I am your host, C. Maria Wall. Tonight is a very special night, as you know. It is not only the continuation of Authors Month, but it's also my birthday celebration, and we are celebrating life. And October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So what better way to kick off that event than to start it early tonight with a very special guest? My guest this evening is Mildred D. Muhammad. She is the former wife of, as many as you know, knew him as the D.C. sniper, John Allen Muhammad. We're going to be getting very real tonight, and we're going to be putting a very serious face on domestic violence, mental illness, and several issues that are plaguing society and the media today. So sit back, relax, tell a friend. We'll be back in a few moments after the official anthem for the Marathon of Hope Kingdom Movement completes. See you soon.
My heart to someone else who can't seem to comprehend and just pretend to love me the way that God loves me.
I can rise from the dark clouds that were weighing me down, shake off the chains that were keeping me bound. I can use my broken pieces to encourage someone else, speak life to a situation, release my brother, my sister from a state of depression, cause you don't have to stay here, trapped in your pain here. Jehovah lives. You too can be saved.
Why do I keep doing this to myself? Giving my heart to someone else who can't seem comprehend and just pretend to love me the way that God loves me. The way that God loves me.
Hello, hello, and welcome to this very special segment of Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. As I said earlier, tonight is about celebrating life. I am your host, C. Maria Wall. Welcome to all of the guests joining me in the show chat room. Guest 3195, 3202, Victoria LaPrince. Thank you, thank you. The early birds always get a special shout out. And to all of the guests joining me on the call query, thank you so much for being here. Some of you have already pressed the number one on your phone. I promise you at some point during the evening, I will be opening the lines and letting you speak with my very special guest tonight, Mildred Muhammad. So sit back, relax, invite some friends. This is a very, very special show, as I said, because we're putting a very real face to that thing called domestic violence. People, if you don't know
what it's like, you're going to be schooled this evening. Because this is something that so many people have so many opinions when they never walked a mile in these shoes. So tonight, we're going to be enlightening you on a very, very deadly and serious situation. So let me tell you a little bit about Mildred D. Muhammad. She is a sincere, thoughtful, and spiritual person. She wanted nothing more than to build a strong family unit in which she would be a good wife and mother. But when her first husband, John Allen Muhammad, turned on her, Mildred knew she had to protect herself and her family. When he emptied out their bank accounts, kidnapped their children, and disappeared, she had to learn to navigate the legal system, all while making sure that he did not find her. She had no money, no job, and she was living in a shelter for abused women when she began her uphill battle to find her children. Ladies and gentlemen, with that said, I am welcoming a wonderful, wonderful lady with a heart of absolute platinum, Mildred Muhammad, to Healing Through Hurt. My sister, thank you so much for joining me here on this very special weekend where we are celebrating life.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you.
Words can't even describe. For those, so many people, it doesn't matter who I brought this up to, they knew of the story of the infamous D.C. sniper.
Yes, ma'am.
But I told people what they didn't know, and a lot of people, the media didn't really put a face to, was what you were going through from your end. And that's where, you know, take us back to before all of this began, because I know at some point you had a wonderful, healthy, or what was seemingly a healthy family.
Yes, ma'am, we did. It was when he returned from Desert Storm that things had changed, and by that time we only had one son, one child. And once he was, before he went, he was jovial, the life of the party. Everybody wanted to be around him. He was a really good person. When he came back from Saudi, he was completely different, although they don't tell you that when you are in the military and your spouse goes to a war zone. They don't tell you that when they come back, they're going to be different. So you're expecting the same person that left, but then when that doesn't happen, no one tells you what to do or how to go about recapturing what is no longer there. And so once he began behaving differently, he was diagnosed with PTSD, and he was not debriefed, but PTSD was not very well known at that time. There were not many resources. No one knew exactly what it was or how to go about assisting. And so John was not someone who wanted to appear to be weak or for anyone to consider him to be a weak man. So whatever resources were available, he did not go. And I couldn't find any.
Wow. And, you know, and you were right, because so many people didn't know and still don't understand fully what PTSD is and how much it can change someone. And again, that was not something that they really informed the public of at the time, because, you know, even now, that's a classic example of what PTSD can do to someone who's been in those war zones and those and have witnessed what they have gone through, those soldiers have gone through there.
But let me say this, that PTSD is not just for the military. It is for anyone who finds themselves in a position where they're always in a heightened alert. They want to call them urban communities, but if you're living in a community that's not safe, if you're if you are a victim of domestic violence or a victim of crime, you can be diagnosed with PTSD, but PTSD is not in itself a symptom that would have you to commit a horrific crime. So I don't want PTSD to be associated with the reason why John did what he did, because he had PTSD and he came from a war zone and he was a soldier. Wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't. There are many who say that he was psychologically not there. However, I don't believe that, because he created a plan.
Mm-hmm.
He was not under drugs or alcohol. He made a conscious decision to make me his target, and he made a conscious decision to get a laptop and create an outline that would kill innocent people to cover up my murder so that he could get custody of the children.
And, you know, I'm glad that you said that, because that was one of my questions, is that, to me, when people have that cognitive reasoning, when they map out and think out plans, that bothers me as a whole, because to me, that means that they have some type of conscious thought of what they are actually doing. And when that came out when that came to light, I remember I was sitting in my bedroom the evening after they had announced all of this, and they were starting to talk, and that was one of the things that I thought, well, he literally sat down, planned this out, and mapped this out. And may I ask, do you even know what changed for him? At some point, he loved you.
I asked him for a divorce. He said, you have become my enemy, and as my enemy, I will kill you. And if I can't have you, then nobody can.
Nobody will.
And that's when he kidnapped our children and took them out of the country. He emptied the bank accounts, told the landlord that he was not going to pay the rent any longer, and he left me and my mother penniless. My mother lived with us at the time, and I passed out signing for a package for her for Mother's Day, and I had to go to the hospital, and they told me I lost 3 units of blood, and didn't know at the time that he had people watching the house, and only 2 people knew I was in the hospital, and he called me and said, how are you? And I said, I'm fine. Why won't you let the children call me? He said, we don't always get what we want, do we? The abuser and the victim have a dialogue, and they are the only 2 people that understand what's happening. You could be very well looking at a couple that is in turmoil, but because the victim is so afraid, her head could be down, she could be looking up, but she does not want to draw attention, because she knows that if she does, it's going to be worse when she gets home. So since he had already told me that you have become my enemy, and as my enemy, I will kill you, I had 2 choices. I could either go back to him and die, or hang up the phone and never see my children again. And I chose to hang up the phone. I let out a scream. The nurses came. And she said, what's the matter? I said, because she traced the call. Caller ID was not even available at that time. And they traced the call to a woman who had called the phone for John. But they couldn't. It was something about the electronics that they couldn't understand where it was. Like I said, it wasn't technology today. It was not technology back then. And shortly thereafter, the nurses came in and said that my mother had just called and said that John was on his way to the hospital to kill me. So they moved me to another room, posted a guard outside my door. I had to change everything. They posted a guard outside my door, and they told them if anybody should come up, they needed to show an ID to show to me, because they didn't know what John looked like. A social worker came in and stated that I couldn't go home, that they were going to take me to a shelter, and I needed to do three things before I left. I needed to change my name and make it a name that is someone calls you, then you will respond. So I chose Millie. They told me I needed to disconnect from everybody that I know, so no one would know where I was, because they needed to hide me. And I had to change my clothes. So they brought me different clothes. We waited until it was dark. They took me out the back door, the emergency room of the hospital. I had to slouch down in the seat so no one could see that I was in the car. But I watched every rooftop and every open window, because I knew it would be a headshot. John's motto was one shot, one kill to the head, never leave an enemy behind. So when they got me to the shelter, they told me that there was one room available. And I'm sitting in that shelter thinking, how did I get here? Married for 12 years. Three children, had my own business, didn't understand that. It's just crazy. And that's where I was for 8 months. While in that eight-month period, I was watching this commercial called Professional Career Development Institute, you know, the online courses that you need. Okay, so I ordered the paralegal courses because I needed to learn the law, because nobody was helping me to try to find my children. And I needed to stay safe long enough to do that. And so I was making straight A's in the shelter. The YWCA found out about it and asked me to come and be an advocate with them. Well, they picked me up at 4 o'clock in the morning in a disguise to get me to their building so that I could work in their legal department. And while there, they said that they would help to represent me. So I would go to court with some of the women that they were helping in a disguise to help them in order to get their children back and in order to get their restraining order. So while I was in the courthouse, I decided to get my paperwork together, which October the 6th of 2000, I had my divorce from John. I had a writ of habeas corpus that stated that anywhere they found my children, they needed to pick them up and bring them back to me. And I had a lifetime restraining order. And that's what my sister called here in Maryland and said that my mother was sick. And so I moved to Maryland, although the media says I fled, but I moved to Maryland in order to help my mother because she had pneumonia. So while I was here, I called the FBI, told them that John had taken my children or our children out of the country without my permission. They sent over an agent. He said, how do you know that your children are no longer in the country? I said, well, my cousin is a private investigator. And he stated that when the trail runs cold, that means that your children are no longer, or people are no longer in the country, and their trail ran cold. So he took my paperwork, sent it back to me 2 weeks later, and said that since this is an ongoing case, they're going to refer me back to Washington State, to the FBI there. I called the agent they gave me and explained to him that I'm hiding for my life. John said he was going to kill me. He's kidnapped the children. They're out of the country, and I need your help to find them. And he said, well, Ms. Muhammad, since we know he's looking for you, we want to put you in the middle of a parking lot and use you as a decoy. This way we can lure him out. I said, excuse me, it's going to be a headshot. He said, well, we're just trying to help you out. In August that same year, executive director of the shelter that I lived in called to tell me that she thinks they found my children, which they did. I had to fly back to Washington State for an emergency custody hearing. And once the judge gave me the children back legally, And while in the courthouse, John tried to attack me. And my attorney and my friend, we all ran down the hallway. And we asked the police department if we could go out through their back door. They said no. So we hurried out the front door in order to go to where they had my children. We picked them up and went to the YWCA, and we flew, my children and I flew out of Washington State September 5th, 2000, and we landed at BWI in 2001. 2002 is when the shootings began, and we didn't know who it was. They told us to look for two Caucasians in a white box truck.
Right.
I was looking for that, and I was looking for John, because I had not put the two together. We have the ATF knocked on my door, and they brought me into the police station for questioning. They asked me, what's the last time I seen John? I said, at an emergency custody hearing, September 5th, 2001. I said, well, Ms. Muhammad, we're just going to have to tell you. We're going to name your ex-husband as the sniper. And did you know you were the target? I said, no, why would I know that? They said, well, the man who was shot six times, they took $3,000 and his laptop. That was right down the street from you. There was another man shot in the abdomen in Brandywine. That's two miles from you. Ms. Muhammad, you were the target. Would you like to go into police custody? That's when they put us in protective custody, me and my children and my sister and brother-in-law. And then the next day is when they caught him. And that whole time, people blamed me. They said if I would have stayed on the West Coast and the people on the East Coast would still be alive. If I would have, how dare I call me and my children victims because we weren't shot? How dare I bring drama into this quiet community? If I would have stayed with him, then he just would have killed me.
And that's the part that, you know, we were just conversing before the show, and I told you that I read all of those hateful comments. I've heard some of them, even myself, and it's so amazing that so many of the things that you have said, I experienced them in my situation. And, you know, I guess this is one of these shows where it's bringing back everything in my life to the forefront, as well as listening to the other side of this story that, you know, the media covers what they want to make it the most sensational thing that they can get. And that in itself, you know, so many people, and there were people who said, why would you want to do this? Why would you have that woman on the show? Okay, that woman is a human being. That woman was a victim. That woman was a target.
No, they don't see it. They don't see me like that. And that's okay. That's okay.
You know, but me being a survivor, I'm like, so are you behind my back? Is that what you're saying about me? Well, no, yours is different. How is it different? Because he didn't have a gun, or you all didn't hear about any other woman that he's hurt or person that he's hurt in his travels. Domestic violence is domestic violence. Your husband, yeah, he mapped it out. That's like we already shared. Mine mapped out, well, he could be taught. He hasn't gone to that type of an extreme, but when someone threatens to take you out, you don't just put that on the back burner. So for so many of you all, I see you, and some of you have already pressed the number one, and I'll get to your call shortly. But this is just so, you know, I'm
but, you know,
so
80% of victims do not have physical scars. Unfortunately, we are a visual society.
Yeah.
Visual meaning if I don't see your pain does not exist. If I don't see your scars do not exist. If I don't see you burned or beaten or cut, if I don't see the scars, shut up and go home. So what he talked to you? So what he called you out your name? That's just a part of a relationship. That's a part of an unhealthy relationship.
Yeah.
John did not hit me. John made me feel like I was worth absolutely nothing. He made other people laugh at me. He humiliated me in public, and I was made to feel like I did not have a voice. And what other people say, oh, she's just being emotional. She didn't have the food cooked right when he came home. Her house wasn't clean. Her children wasn't bathed. I did all of that and then some. But yet, they praise the abuser and they silence the victim. John was very well liked in the community. John was very well liked everywhere. How dare you say something so evil like that with him? If I were you, I would take him back. If you love him like that, you can have him.
That's right.
If you want him, you can keep him. I'll have his clothes packed for you. So they don't want to believe that someone so well-liked, and it doesn't matter what your educational status is. It doesn't matter what your job is, how much money you make. An abuser can be from the very rich to the very poor. Doesn't matter. But if that person is well-liked, if that person has shown you the best side of them, which that's what abusers do, they show you the wonderful side of themselves outside of the house. And I used to hear women would tell me all the time, and some soldiers, Sergeant Williams is a wonderful man. You have a good husband. I'm thinking, but you don't have to live with him. That's my thought. You don't have to live, but I can't say that. But you don't have to live. What do? You just smile and say, oh, okay, thank you. Hoping somebody would recognize that I'm in trouble. But nobody did, because they're so in awe about the abuser. We hear talk of Ray Rice, his record of how wonderful of a person he was with the football and the bullying and all these things. The only thing you know about Janae is that they met in high school and they met in college and they stayed in contact. We don't know what kind of education she has. We know nothing about her. Why is that? But we know everything about him. They praise the abuser. They silence the victim. You didn't hear anything about me because the prosecutor said, Ms. Muhammad, this is the worst case of domestic violence. I'm thinking the worst case, I'm not dead, though. That would be the worst case. That was how I was thinking. He said, no, the worst, because he involved other people and he locked down three states to create an atmosphere that took the attention from you to other people when his target was you. See, everybody thinks that I am saying I was the target because the police and the media didn't put it out. And the reason they didn't put it out is because the laws in domestic violence are not strong enough to execute anybody. They changed the laws on the Terrorist Act in order to make sure he would get the death penalty. People don't know the legal movements that took place in order for John to be executed so quickly. When they caught him, hear me clearly, when they caught him, they had absolutely nothing to hold him on, nothing. All they had was Lee's palm print on a magazine that they had in Atlanta. That was enough to hold him. They had nothing concrete to hold John. Legally, they would have had to let him go in 24 hours. The sheriff at that time went through the NCIC, National Crime Information Center, to try to find something that they could hold him on. The Tacoma Police Department did not put my restraining order from Washington State in the NCIC. That's why every time they stopped him, and they found out after the investigation, they stopped him several times. They didn't have nothing because my restraining order wasn't in that system. That sheriff pulled that restraining order, put it in the NCIC. That is what they used to hold him as a violation of the restraining order, because he carried a weapon across state lines. It is a federal offense to carry a weapon, even a bullet, across state lines if you have a restraining order against you. That's what they held him on. And as soon as they got that, they kicked me and my children to the curb. You didn't hear nothing. They was all up on me trying to get me to answer questions, and I did. And once they got what they wanted, you didn't hear nothing else about us, because they could not have domestic violence as one of the charges when they were trying to get the death penalty. That's what all of that was about. So you didn't hear about me and my children. I called victims compensation. They said, "Miss Muhammad, were you shot? Did you get a nick? Did you get hurt? Oh, I'm sorry. There's nothing we can do for you. You're not a victim." But I was the first victim. I didn't have the physical scars to prove it, but I was. My children were the next ones. They didn't have scars. They were taken to Antigua for 18 months, lived in the outskirts of that country, had to haul water in white peanut buckets because he had them so far back, they didn't have running water. They had to sleep on the floor, on the ground. Red ants would eat my son every night. My daughter slept on a sponge mattress. Lee was my children's best friend because Lee wanted to be a part of a family, and John brought Lee into that nucleus, and Lee became their big brother while John was selling illegal documentation, passports, birth certificates, and getting airline tickets to bring people from Antigua to the United States and welcome them into the country. And he left our children with Lee with no food, nobody to take care of them for a month or two at a time. So when you say that he was mentally incompetent, where was he mentally incompetent? Because he had a plan. And he was willing to kill innocent people to execute that plan. But people blame me. It's my fault. I should have stayed with him. You should have done more to help him. Why wasn't you there for him? Where is it that my life means something? Where is it that I deserve to live and be happy and raise my children? Because I want a divorce. Now you have millions of women, and I do say millions because I'm talking all over the world, who want to live a safe, loving, productive life. If the good men don't stand up, because we're talking about a few men, we're not talking about the totality of men. We're talking about a few men. But the good men are not stepping up to saying, you know what, you can't do that to my sister. You can't do that to my daughter. You can't do that. That's your relationship. You picked them. That's who you decided to be with. No, that's not who I picked. I thought I picked a good person. I didn't know he was going to turn out to do this, but just because he does and I come to you for help, doesn't mean you don't help me. Doesn't mean you just leave me there. You leave me to be killed. You leave me to find my own way. You leave me with no sense of safety. I'm just there because you don't want to challenge him. And you're my brother. And you're my uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And you're my cousin. And because he's a man, you don't want to step inside of another man's house to tell another man what to do, but you leave his wife and children to be harmed. And then what do they say? Oh, well, she was this, and she was so nice, and she was that. And we know she was a victim, but we didn't know it was that bad. How did you not know if I told you? How did you not know? Chris Brown and Rihanna, before the pictures came out, everybody blamed her. Well, she shouldn't have took his phone. Well, she shouldn't have did this. Well, you know, they talk so badly about her. But when the pictures came, that's why we are a visual society. If I don't see your pain does not exist.
Yeah, and I will tell you, and all the listeners, as I'm sitting here listening to you, I'm in total shock and awe because your story is so, I'm sure that a lot of the listeners, and I'm sure that some of you are survivors and some of you may still be in your storm. But let me just make some contrast here. My ex-husband was well-liked by everybody. The first time I called the police to our house, he was so charismatic. They were standing out there laughing and joking right along with him. I had gone before a judge for a protection order, and that judge told me exactly what you said, Mildred. He said, come back when you have some scars, when you have some bruises is what he said. I said, Your Honor, I said, I'm a woman of a darker hue, and if you know anything about skin tones, you know, a darker hued person, it takes longer for a bruise to show up, and if it does, then that means that I'm really hurt. Well, come back then. And I talked to one very well-known, supposed to be group that helps battered women, and I was speaking to one of the people called, and they said, can you talk? And I said, no. You know, I was trying to play upbeat to play it off. And she said, well, look, call me back when you can talk because I don't have time for this, quote, unquote. She hung up. Secondly, I called back again. It got to the point where my old job, he had started things at my job, and they pulled me into the HR department. And they put me on the phone with the same organization again. And I said, you know, I don't know what to do at this point, and I told them what the judge had told me, and they said, well, we have a list of judges that are like that. And I said, why don't you let us know so that I won't waste my time going before a judge that's not going to help me? Her response was, and I'll never forget this, and I've shared this on my show before, she said, well, we can't tell the public because that would cut into our funding if we made the judicial system mad with us.
Mm.
And I said, no, you did not just say that. Even here, even our local police department, I had no idea that they had a domestic violence liaison. I called them back in, what, 2009 or something? I'm still waiting for a return call, and it's almost 2015. We have a problem here. We have an absolute problem here. I just said it the other day. I said, one of my neighbors said, well, couldn't you have gone to therapy? Couldn't you have done this? Because I liked him. And the same thing you said, Mildred, is what I told her. You know what? You liked him so much, you take him. Oh, that's right. You can't have him because he chose one of the neighbors to go with. So the bottom line is simple. He had more women in this neighborhood than a little bit, where yours made other people victims. Mine was jumping around. He had people, and they still to this day. He watches what I do. For the longest time, he was having things delivered to my home, and one of his women in the neighborhood would pick them up from my porch. He has threatened to kill me. It's up on YouTube. If he's foolish enough, he thought that he was being smart enough to leave me voicemails, I put him up on YouTube. people, like you say, people sit around and I said, so once I'm dead, you all are going to say, oh, well, I knew she wasn't smiling as much, and I thought maybe something was wrong, but I didn't want to get involved in this. And I'm sure right about now, some of you listening are probably saying, oh, my gosh, that's your life too. This is why this show is so important tonight, because but for the grace of God, Mildred and her children are fine. I'm still standing. Even though my abuser is still out there, he has not acted upon his threat thus far, and I refuse. Although I do have weapons, I do have cameras on my home, I'm nobody's fool, but I'm not going to stop living either. And I know right now this may be hitting home for so many people, and right now we do have some comments. Victoria writes in the show chat room that those people's comments were bull because Mildred was actually the target, then why was John shooting random individuals with a lot of question marks? She said, BS at its finest. And Victoria, let me know if you heard Mildred when she explained that. This was John's elaborate plan to cover up so that when he shot his wife, she would appear.
Ex-wife.
His ex-wife. But no, at the time, no, you were already divorced
yes, ma'am.
When this was going on. Okay, ex-wife. She was already his ex-wife. That makes it even worse. She was already his ex-wife. He could have moved on, but he wanted it to appear that she was another one of the random victims. Correct, Mildred? That's how.
Correct.
That was his
yes,
plan.
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
So, he wanted this. Mine just point blank told me he was going to do the deed, sit on the side, on the corner with his hands behind his back and wait for them to take him away. That's what mine told me. So it's one of those things where this is so amazing to me. Some of the dates that you said were important dates in my life. I went back to school. It was so bad that when I went back to school studying law, the school was on notice. They changed around some of my class's curriculum. Family law, I couldn't do anything dealing with domestic violence because they said that sometimes when the abuser sees that you're doing that, that's a trigger for them.
Correct.
So they switched around my entire curriculum. I, too, had to know the law for myself because it was evident. Once I was not someone out here who was helping other people, and I became a statistic and a number in this system, and I got a chance to see it from those of us who were the victim, oh, it just changed my perspective all the way around for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is why this is so important, this is a very charged show tonight, and I'm so sorry, Mildred, we're going to come off of this soon because I know that reliving it is very emotional, and
definitely.
For me,
no.
You know,
okay.
Because
I'm good. Let me tell you, I can walk away from this, and I am at peace. I am grateful that God has given me the peace that I have. I have the closure. When you were talking about counseling, I tried to get counseling for me and my children. I came across unethical counselors who only wanted to be able to say, well, I counseled them and I did this for them and I did that for them. One counselor told my son didn't want to go to counseling. And I was wondering why he didn't want to go to this particular person because I thought the guy was helping him. Come to find out, he told John he wanted him to call Lee Malvo and talk to him for him so that they could do something together. I went out to the library, got a book on counseling, and learned how to counsel me and my children myself because I figured if anybody going to mess them up, it may as well be me. But at least they would have somebody who they could talk to. So I had to put all of my emotions aside in order to give my children what they needed. They wanted to know about their dad. I told them that I am your best resource about your dad. I will tell you the truth. even if it makes me look bad, I will give you the good, the bad, and the indifferent, but it will only be the truth. I will not talk badly about your dad. I will not make you feel bad for asking me questions about him. We watched home videos. They wanted to know what this was about, how did this turn out, but it was about my children. I wanted them to be emotionally balanced. After the execution, they wanted to go to the funeral, so I took them to the funeral. I didn't go in, but they needed to have that closure. Once we got back, they were good. If you see my children right now, you wouldn't even know that they went through anything, because it was all about making sure that they were emotionally well and were an asset and not a deficit to this society. I told them that they were not allowed to use their dad as a reason for failure. My dad is a DC sniper, and I couldn't do this or that. Wrong answer. You got to come up with one better than that, because I'm not accepting that as your reason for failure. So let's make this happen. We got to keep it moving. Whatever people are saying about your dad, that's their opinion. They're entitled to it. True or false, it's their opinion. They're entitled to it. We don't have that kind of energy to go and debate with anybody, and we're not going to do that anyway, nor will we take responsibility for his actions. Those were his actions, not ours. And that's how we have been moving forward, because we got to keep living regardless.
Right.
If people don't like us, then they don't like us. That's their opinion. They have that right. That's how I look at it. They have a right to whatever emotions that they want to display. Doesn't mean I have to accept it. Doesn't mean I have to internalize it. Doesn't mean that at all. That's their opinion. Everybody's entitled to it. But we got to keep going. We got to keep living. And we got to keep moving, because God gave us breath. And we have to make sure that we honor him with every breath that we take.
Amen, and that is so true. And if you all, you're hearing it again and again and again. Ladies and gentlemen, this is it. We cannot, as Mildred said, you cannot allow your past or your past experiences to dictate who you are and to become the reason for you not moving forward and being a positive addition to society or an asset to society. I know so many people that blame their past for everything. This happened, so this is why I'm the way it is. It happened 10, 15, 30, 50, 60, 70 years ago, and you're still using it for an excuse. And people are entitled to it. Not everybody's going to like you. And you could be righter than rain, and there are going to be people that are going to find a way to make you the scapegoat. And as sad as it is, and for those of you who've been down this road of domestic violence, you understand exactly what we're saying right now. Mildred, if you don't mind, because the comments are coming in quickly here over on the events page. Melanie Inspires Tolerance, right? They were not allowed to use their dad as a reasonable failure. Mildred, I love it. We don't have that kind of energy to go and debate with others, nor should we take responsibility for his actions. We have to keep living. Everyone is entitled to their opinions, and we do not have to accept it. Mildred Muhammad is speaking the truth. Great advice. Tina Hobson writes, oh, how this reminds me of the biblical story of the woman caught in adultery. How ironic that both she and the man were actually caught, but she was the only one brought forth to be judged in stone. And Arlene Spann, amen, so correct. But our Jesus had something to say to all of them. And, you know, Arlene also goes right, I'm so grateful for this broadcast on domestic violence. Melanie Inspires Policy, it came at such a time as this. We need it with all the things going on in society. And Arlene writes, amen. I'm reflecting back to the domestic violence that I witnessed in my late teens. I believe Arlene is on the line. She'll be speaking live in a moment. While we are a visual society, if we do not If I do not see your scars, they do not exist. Mildred Muhammad, wow, that is deep. And you have a lot of people welcoming you to the show tonight. Back over here on the show page, Victoria writes that she understands now and that she sees exactly what John had done. And caller 9174, caller 9174, you are on the air with Mildred Muhammad on Healing Through Hurt.
Thank you so much, C. Marie. It's Arlene Stan, and welcome, Mildred.
Thank you.
This has been such an inspiring story tonight, and to see how you are willing to come on once again and open up and let the world be made aware of what the face of domestic violence looks like, and to let people understand that, no, you might not see physical scars, but there is scarring. And for you being willing to allow us to just go back and revisit the various portions and parts of your life to help us better understand what one phase of domestic violence looks like. So I just want to thank you for just coming on and sharing that with us tonight. Because as I put in the chat room, I am reflecting back to my own teen years and going through a segment of domestic violence myself and reaching out to the police. And I was listening to something that you said, Mildred, and I can remember how the police responded to a call that I gave to them. And it was, well, you know, we can't do anything for you right now because both of you are parents and you don't have a restraining order and you don't have these things. So I'm thankful for you allowing us to see just how the system itself needs to be reformed and taking us through the portions of how things happen for you and even how, I'm going to say, they kicked you to the curb. Is what they did. That's what the kids call it nowadays. But mm-hmm. in your speech, you said something that made me reflect on a Bible verse like what Tina was talking about. And then Isaiah talks about woe unto those who call evil good and good evil. And people wanted you to take the evil that was happening to you and say, but no, it's okay. Let me turn it around and say it's good. And wanting you to be made in your mind of thinking that what you did was wrong. You know, it's all because of you. But I thank you for your strength tonight that you are able to share with other women and let us realize that when we finally get our strength within us, we can stand up and know that even as a survivor, even as a victim, we don't have to be the victim. We know how to become the victor. And that's what I hear from you, that strength as that survivor and that hope for other women. So thank you tonight for coming and being willing to share your story so that we can push forward. And I pray that many, many people are on the call tonight so that they too can hear what you have to share with us so that we can move forward. So thank you once again for coming and sharing with us tonight.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sister.
I did not have a question, just a comment. I just wanted to thank her, Auntie Maria. Did not have a question. Back to you.
Thank you, Sister Arlene. Thank you so much for your continued support. And for those of you who are on the call query, if you have a question or a comment, you can press the number 1 on your phone right now, and that will put you into the call query. Let me know, and I will bring you online. And for those of you, of course, in the Facebook chat or event chat room, and, of course, here in the show chat room, if you have any questions or comments, for those of you logged in as guests, for you to participate, you would have to log in under screen name if you're on the show chat room. Or you can give us a call at 646-478-4726, then press the number 1 on your phone. and that will bring you into the call query. Keep the comments coming. We are about to move on. We're transitioning now because this is a celebration of life tonight, and we are about to transition from this dark time in history, because that's what it is. It's history. It's in the past. It's in the past. Caller 3223, I will be bringing you online in a moment. So we are about to transition into the forgiveness phase. This is the hardest phase for so many people. They don't know how to forgive, not only if it applies yourself, because so many of us, even if we're innocent as we can be, we, especially sometimes as women, we tend to keep rethinking and reliving and going over it because we have to find the fault and say, well, maybe if I had done this and that. We need to let all of that go. It's called history for a reason. History means in the past. It has nothing to do with the here and now. It has nothing to do with 5 minutes ago. Well, 5 minutes ago is history, too. And we should not allow it. History is meant to teach us a lesson. It's not meant to hinder us and to prevent us from moving forward and living. So with that said, we're about to move into our forgiveness phase, which is one of the hardest things for so many people to do. But before we do that, caller 3223, last four digits, 3223, you're on air with Mildred Muhammad here on Healing Through Hurt. Caller 3223, are you with us? Okay, caller 3223, I will check back with you in a moment. We're going to go back into a discussion right now. Caller 3223, going once, are you there? Okay, we will go back to caller 3223. So, Mildred, we're going to move along now because one of the hardest things for so many people is that thing called forgiveness. And you started talking on it, and again, you had to learn how to counsel and do this on your own. But forgiveness. The question that so many people have is, did you forgive John?
Yes,
and
I did.
How did you forgive him? How did you forgive him?
I never talked to him. Some people feel that you have to have a conversation with the person to explain to them what they did to you. They already know what they did. To explain
right.
to them what they did to you and how they made you feel and what most people who are in pain don't understand, that the person that administered the pain knew exactly what they did, how they did it, and they also knew what the results would be after they did what they did. So they don't need a reminder for them to hear what they did. All you're doing is letting them know just how well they did what they did. If you watch
yes.
these court shows and you hear the women, the people giving their victims' impact statements, don't listen to, let me rephrase that, listen to the victim impact statements, but most importantly, watch person to whom they're speaking. Their head is down. They're not showing any type of remorse whatsoever. Forgiveness is for you. Ask yourself this question. Do you want to walk around with a suitcase with your abuser's name on it everywhere you go? Everywhere you go, at work, when you're at play, when you're at home, take that bag, open it up, look at everything that person made you feel. If you felt shame, guilt, embarrassment, humility, you felt like you were worth nothing, take all of those words, get you a dictionary, because the definitions of these words are different before trauma than they are after trauma. So you need to find out exactly what that emotion is, because some of those words come with many definitions. Go through each definition and find the one that resonates with your spirit, because that is the pain that you're feeling. Once you understand your pain, you can move away from your pain. If you don't understand your pain, that's how you stay in pain. Every tear that drops from your eyes, you need to know why. There's a reason for that tear. If you don't know the reason for that tear, you're crying and you're crying and you're crying. But know that every tear that you cry is one step closer to your healing, but you got to know why you're crying. So when you look up anger and you find that definition, you have understanding. You have a comprehensive knowledge. You can now speak to that anger and say, you know what, I'm not angry about that anymore. I need to move on to the next emotion. Because the next tear you drop, you know it's not going to be because you're angry, because you've handled that emotion. That's how I was able to get through mine. I went through every single emotion. I wrote it down. I wanted to dissect and understand and pull out and get to the root of why I felt the way that I felt, because I needed to be over and done with John. Yes, we have three children, and sometimes they look like them, they walk like them, and they talk like them, but I can say to them, you know what? You act just like your dad, and just laugh about it, because that is one reality I cannot change. He is, was, and always will be their dad. I don't have to make them feel bad about it. I don't have to bring up the bad things about him, because for whatever reason, God saw fit to bring the three of them through the both of us, and I should not make them choose which parent to love. No, they don't condone what their dad did. They don't like what he did, but they cannot change the fact that he is their dad. So we talk about him sometimes, and I do not make them feel uncomfortable, because they do, because they have a right to. He's their dad. I can't change that. But that's how I was able to get through my pain. I tackled every emotion, dived into it, dissected it, got to the root, dug it up, and that's why I'm at peace. I can smile. I am happy. I move forward with my life. I can talk about John. I can bring him up, talk about him, and put him right back and leave it alone. And my thermostat does not change, because I am the author of the temperature in my head, in my body, in my environment. I control the thermostat. John controls nothing. I can talk about him, and it doesn't sting. I don't cry. I don't do anything, and I give it all for the glory of God, because if it had not been for God, there's no way in the world I would have been able to think and do the things that I did in order to be where I am now. So I didn't need to talk to John to get forgiveness. I didn't need to have him to say, I'm sorry for what I did. Whether he's sorry or not, I don't care, because I needed to move forward. And the best way for me to move forward was to say, you know, okay, he wanted to do this to me, God intervened. He wanted to make my life miserable, that happened for a minute, but I'm okay now. That's how I was able to move forward. And that's what I would give to anybody. Get a sheet of paper, draw a line down the middle. Pros and cons about yourself. What you don't like about yourself. What you like about yourself. When you list them, then you know what you need to work on. you know if you like yourself or not. You know if you can sit in a room without the radio on or no music and you hear all these voices in your head telling you what you are or not. Tell them to shut up. Don't tell me what's up. In Ephesians 2, God said he created you to be a masterpiece. It didn't say what situation you had to be in. It didn't say if you were rich or poor. It said he created you to be a masterpiece. Do not allow anybody who did not create you to make you feel less than a masterpiece. Don't give them that right. Take that back. Take back everything you gave to anybody that gave them, that made them feel that they had a right to tell you who you are. They don't know you. You give them a snippet at work with your friends and with everybody else, but you know who you are. You love who you are. You stand on who you are, and you don't allow anybody to make you feel less than that. You walk with your head up. You stick your chest out, and whatever comes in your sphere, you handle it because you know that God is backing you. You don't fear nothing and nobody. That's where I'm at now. I don't have time for madness. I don't have people around me I don't trust. If I can't trust you, you can't be around me. I got to be able to know you got my back. If you're questionable, you got to go. It's just that simple. Don't hold on to toxic relationships. Ain't nothing wrong with being by yourself. Because epiphanies come when you are alone. God talks to you when you're by yourself. He don't talk to you in a crowd of people. He talks to you when you're by yourself because you're listening, and he knows he has your attention.
Yes.
You got me preaching.
Hey, that is what this show is all about, because guess what? What you have said, and people always ask me, because I was on a show some time ago, and I said two things. My ex is not worth my tears. And secondly, they said, right after the protection order ended, first thing he did was email me. We need to talk because, quote, unquote, he wrote, I want closure. He wanted closure. I didn't respond then. I haven't responded to any of his family members who tried to reach out to me, and I certainly haven't spoken to him. I have not spoken to him. I kept my stepdaughter. I kept my two grandbabies. I don't give him any power in my life. Do we sit up there and I say, you know what? This is what I do, the same thing you do. I speak to help other people, men and women, because some men go through it. Some people say, well, why are you still talking about it? Hello, I'm a speaker. That's when you hear me talking about it. You don't hear me calling you on the phone saying, my ex, you know, he did this, and I'm this, and I'm – no. I refuse to allow him to steal any more of my joy. He had me in that place for a time, but his time is over, and I'm not about to let him see that I'm not going to walk out the door. I'm not going to cut my grass. He can ride up and down the street all he wants. But the bottom line is I'm still going to live, and I'm not going to give him that power that he's seeking. I want to talk to you. About what? We are divorced. You've moved on. I've moved on. What is there for us to talk about? We didn't have any biological children together. So what do I need to talk to him about? Absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But so many women don't understand that, Mildred. They will sit here and they will say, what do you mean? You don't spend any tears on them and you don't want to talk to them and blah, blah. Because what is there to talk about? They didn't change. They're not some brand new person. And they just want to hear just how much you felt and how much they believe that they hurt you. Like you said, why would you all want to validate
your abuser's bad behavior. We have some people coming now on the call. Let's take another one. Caller 3412, last four, 3412. Good evening. You are on air with Mildred, Muhammad, and me. Hello.
Hi, me and Mildred. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm blessed and highly favored, Sister Mildred. Maria knows who I am. I'm Tina.
Okay.
I am a superwoman from I Am a Superwoman Radio Blog Talk Radio Show. And
okay.
Before that, I was Maria's friend, sister in Christ, and will continue to be that until life do us part.
Yes.
Okay. I don't talk about that other stuff, but even though it's real, I'm so happy that you transitioned into this period of speaking about forgiveness. It's so godly important. From a slightly different perspective, and I'm free today, so I don't have a problem with admitting who I am, what I am, what I did, or how I did it in the past. I'm free from that, so I can talk about it with a smile on my face today because TGIF, thank God I am forgiven by the Most High God.
Right.
I was an abuser. Abusers come in all sexes, ages. You know, we hear so much about bullying today. Abuse is abuse no matter who it comes from or in
yes,
what
ma'am.
Form, emotional, financial, spiritual, physical. Abuse is abuse, and those unseen scars are the hardest to heal because, you know, like you said, people don't, if they don't see it, they don't feel it, and they sometimes, most times, don't believe it.
Right.
But coming from the abuser's perspective, and it's so true that what goes around comes around. My first marriage, I was an abuser. My second one, I was an abusee. And with my first marriage, I found, well, God found the need for me to ask for forgiveness for my first husband.
Okay.
And me being me, I argue with the Holy Spirit. God told me to do it. I said, no, I'm not. He said, yes, you are. I'm like, no, I'm not. But as always, he wins. And I'm so glad he does.
Mm-hmm.
And this man and still happens to be in a nursing home. We had children together. And the children are who they are. They are who they are. They're all adults with children. But the thing is, the forgiveness part, I needed to ask for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need so much to be forgiven if he had chosen not to. You know, that was his choice.
Right.
But I went to him reluctantly and asked him for forgiveness. For the part that I played in the demise of our marriage, for the abusive behavior that I, you know, perpetrated towards him mentally, emotionally, and oftentimes physically. Sexually, I held back sex whenever I felt like it. I just, whatever I thought I could do, I did it. I did it. I was totally selfish and self-centered at that time, knew nothing about being a wife, knew nothing about being a mother, so I lashed out. I was uncomfortable in my own skin, and I lashed out in very unhealthy manners that made a lot of people in my life, most people in my life, very uncomfortable with me. Because I was uncomfortable with myself.
Mm-hmm.
But the result of me going to him and asking for forgiveness resulted in us forgiving each other.
Okay.
And what a glorious day that was, that now we can actually hold conversations. I go to visit him, not on a regular basis, but, you know, every once in a while when I feel
yes,
the need to just go and see how he's doing, I can do that without any hesitation now. So forgiveness is very important. Forgiveness will set you free. It set me free.
Yes,
from
ma'am.
Almost 40 years of turmoil, sometimes not knowing what was going on with me. But God revealed it to me, and I thank God that I was able to be obedient to that nudging, to that urging to do what I needed to do. And today I'm okay.
Well, that's great. That's a wonderful thing.
Yes.
And thank you for sharing that. And thank you for sharing that, because a lot of people don't understand that abusers can be women too. And actually the statistics for domestic violence has changed. It used to be 95% women, 95% women, 5% men. Now it's 85% women are being abused by men, and 15% of men are being abused by women. So the stats have changed.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you for being on the call tonight, Maria. Thank you for having her.
Thank you for having me on here, too.
Thank you. Someday we may have to do a part two, because this here is just a powerful show. And like I said, we're bringing some wonderful things to light that you all have heard before, but when you hear it from other people, and it's almost identical. This is a recipe for your healing. It's a recipe for forgiveness. It is a recipe for you to move forward and let it go. Break every chain. People, break every chain. You can live your entire life being the slave to your past and your abusers, and they have moved on to the next third, fourth, fifth, sixth victim, and the bottom line is you're still here.
Right.
At ground zero, under their foot, and they have thrown away that pair of shoes, and you're still stuck to the bottom of it. People, there comes a time when you have to let it go. And like Milton has said it, and I've said it before, I don't care who's going to come up to me and tell me what I should have, would have, could have done. They didn't walk that mile in my shoes.
That's right.
They didn't know. And then you hear everybody and their brother after the fact, oh, well, I noticed that you weren't smiling anymore, and I noticed this, and I didn't want to get involved, and I didn't
you didn't love me.
This.
Then you didn't love
like,
me.
Then you didn't
then
care.
You did
exactly.
not love me. You did not
exactly.
love me.
Exactly.
Because if you love me, you say you my friend, then you will ask me what's going on. Even if you didn't know what to say or what to do, you would have said something. And for those who know victims, who know that someone is in an abusive relationship and you don't know what to do, here's what you can do. You can pull that person aside. You can text that person. Make sure, though, that the person is not around the abuser, because you know the abuser. Ask the victim, how can I help you? That's all you say. You don't give them an out. You don't finish their sentence for them. You don't answer the question for them. You ask a simple question, how can I help you? Now, make sure you can back up what you're saying. Don't put yourself in harm's way. Don't offer somebody in pain something you're not willing to pay. Don't say, well, you know, whatever you need, I come to you for $500. And you say you ain't got it, or can I go ask somebody else? But see, you said whatever you need. Be careful what you say to somebody in pain, because
that's right.
For a person in pain, whatever you say, it's a lifeline. You're throwing me a raft. You're throwing me a rope that I can hold on to. You best believe I'm going to take a hold of that rope, and you better deliver everything that you just said, because you just gave me a rope. So before you throw that rope, make sure you're going to be able to do what this person is asking of you. Because domestic violence is real, and people are in pain, and not all of them are scars. Some people just need help. And if you're not going to help, then don't step up.
That's right. That's right. Did you all hear that? And that doesn't mean, like, you know, that was just an example of the $500, but the thing is, can I have a place to stay? Can I do any? Can you help me out? Can you give me? Can I put some of my clothes here, because I'm trying to prepare for my big getaway? can you help me out here? And then if you're going to do it, do it. And that's the one thing that I'm talking about tomorrow morning. I do a show on Sunday morning. It's called the Sunday Morning Inspiration. Tomorrow I'm talking about the cosmetic Christians. And that's one of the things, because so many, and I have people right now, you know, yesterday was my birthday, and so many people sent me their little cryptic messages about what God wants me to do and how to change me and this, because domestic violence doesn't just come through spouses. Don't send me your cryptic blessing me for my birthday, but God wants me to change and be something for someone else. If you don't know what I've been through, you don't give me your cryptic religious message based on what somebody told you, because nobody knows what an abuser looks like. And some people don't even want to think, oh, I'm hearing one side of a story. That's for the small minds with the big mouths. The bottom line is you've heard one side of a story, one side. And you got to send me a happy birthday, and may God send you the answers to how you need to live. And I'm like, no,
how
no,
you need to live.
I say this, if you telling me as a victim or as an abuser, you come to me and you're giving me advice, make sure you can take your own medicine. Don't tell me something that if the shoe was on the other foot, you wouldn't do. Because you're wasting my time.
That's right.
Don't give
and
me
don't
advice
pray for me.
You can't take. No, you can't. You can't be
that's
under everybody's
right.
prayers.
That's right.
Some people pray
some people.
Some people's prayers ain't for you. They just not for you. And you gotta know. Yeah, don't pray over me.
Before.
I'm good. I'm good.
I've said it before. Please don't pray.
I'm good. I'll encourage myself. I don't know where all these prayers coming from. That's crazy.
It's like, you know, they be tying up the line to Jesus. Don't pray for me.
Mm-hmm.
I pray God will change you. No, I'm okay. Thank you.
Pray
but
he
no
change
thanks.
You because
that's right.
You're making a judgment call based upon
that's right.
a snippet of information that you have.
That's
so
right.
make sure he changes you so that he can give you the strength to not let that stuff fall out of your mouth towards me. That's how
that's
that
right.
works. That's how
thank
that
you,
works.
Ma'am. That's right. And I've said it before. Don't, mm-mm. Not every prayer is for you. And not everybody praying you is praying for your best interest. They praying
no,
for what somebody
not.
Else wants
they're
you to become.
They praying for your demise.
That's
praying
right.
for your demise. Mm-hmm.
Melody Inspires Thomas wrote, "Don't lose sleep over the opinion of sheep." That's right.
I know that's right. I'm going to have to use that one, Thomas.
I have no time for sheeple. I don't play with sheeple. I always write down, almost every week I write something about sheeple. Uh-uh. No. A lioness has no time to deal with sheeple. Really,
that's
I don't.
That's
your
line.
That's
freedom. When you no longer seek approval from others, when you no longer seek the opinion of others, when other people's opinions do not dictate the way you make your decisions, you are free.
That's right. That's right. And don't let anybody tell you any different. So many people are you're controlled by what people think. And that's where we fall into this trap of victimization that we stay in because we're so worried about what people think. When I first started this show, Healing Through Hurt, I had people tell me, somebody might recognize a voice. Okay, I don't care. If you're that scared, don't come on the show. This is about healing. And in order for us to heal, we have to talk about it. We have to let it go. Once you talk about it, some things you throw them out after that. It's done. Leave it alone. But unless we talk about it, if you sit up here and I say, Mildred, come on the show, and you just sitting here.
Right.
And that's all right. We hear. That, let me do this again because I'm you know that went over some folks' heads. I know that probably went over some heads.
You know,
people when you go back and listen to this, you'll get it eventually.
Ooh,
but again, you come on this show, and I've been pumping this up, and I said, you know, Mildred's going to, we're going to be talking about all this, and then when you tune in and all you hear is
something wrong.
Something very wrong.
Something wrong.
So this is why you have to talk it out, walk it out, and brush it off.
Yes, ma'am, you do.
Okay.
You do. I had a an official. I don't know what to call her. She wasn't a council person. She was an official at a conference, and we was all sitting at the table, and I wasn't there to speak. I was just a guest. And she leaned over to me. I think she's going to say something nice. She leaned over. She said, Mildred Muhammad. I said, yes, ma'am. How you doing? She said, you know what? I'm so tired of hearing your story. When are you going to shut up? I said, you know, because you got to keep your composure. You can't say the first thing that pop in your head because you're not supposed to do that, right? So I just smiled, and I said, yes, ma'am. I said, I think I'm going to tell one of my other sisters who like to cut people what she said. Because, you know, they say you got to have certain friends with you. Because when you're too nice, you got to have the friends that will come up and say, you know what, you can't say that to her. So I went to two of those friends, and they was like, where's she at? I said, okay, hold on, that's no. No, I didn't know y'all going to go and roll like that. I underestimated. I got it. So I went back to her, and I said, you know what? I said, I appreciate your comment, but I'm going to tell you like this. This is what God put on my spirit to do. And although you may be tired of hearing it, I may be saving somebody else's life whom God needs me to touch. So I am a willing vessel, and I am willing to go places because I told him, Lord, you get me through this. Here I am. Send me. Send me wherever you need me to go. To save whomever needs to be saved, to speak a word that can touch whosoever heart you need to be touched. I don't do this for me at all. Because if it was me, I asked him in the first place. If he would have just asked me if I wanted to go through this, I would have told him no. But
that's
he didn't
right.
ask. So I had to step up to the plate and deal with it the best way that I knew. I prayed, I fasted, I journaled. I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I didn't get high. I didn't use the external forces that Satan used to pull you into him. I dug deep inside and pulled God out of me. That's how I got through this. I had to think. I had to put my emotions aside. I had to write. Journaling helped me. I still journal because I can get to the root of what it is I need to understand about me so that I can be a better person the next day to touch those who God wants me to touch. I don't do this for me. I ask my children. Before I started, I'm talking about their dad. Who wants to go? Who wants anybody to talk about your dad? I pulled him in the room. 2006 is when I started. Let me ask you this. I hear women calling me in my sleep. I couldn't even sleep. I hear voices in my head. Everywhere I go, it's like women in pain coming up to me, telling me their stories. I got to do this. I got to talk about your dad. I got to tell my story. How do you feel
right.
about that? They said, Mom, as long as you tell the truth, we don't have a problem. That's all they said. And that's what I've been doing ever since, with their permission. Sometimes they go with me to my events, and the people looking at them like, who is that? I say,
These are my children. Why are they so grown up and you can't even tell anything's wrong with them? Exactly. My daughters are in college, 21, 22. Both sing opera in 8 different languages. I can't even sing them in one. 8 different languages. My son was going to be, he was being scouted by NFL. March 4th of last year, he was diagnosed with MS. 23 years old. 100% disabled. 23. I'm thinking, what the? Nobody has MS in my family. Nobody in John's family. Where did this come from? So for a whole year, we're trying to figure out what to do. I'm putting it up on my Facebook page, what's going on. What does God do? Bam. A neurologist is my Facebook friend. Emails me and say, Mildred, I see you're having all these problems with your son. Can you bring him in? Yeah, I can bring him in. Right down the street from me. We go in. She does an assessment. She said, I can help your son. Medication is $4,000 a month. But we can get a grant. Once a month, he can come in and take this medication. He's been doing this for 5 months. You look at the boy. I'm sorry, he's a man. You look at the man. You don't even know anything wrong with him. He's not 100% disabled. He's 100% able. God truly blessed him. So we're fine. We're healthy. We're good. The girls are good. My son is good. I'm good. You got to trust and believe that God knows what he's doing, even when it doesn't look like it. Even when you, if you just have the faith the size of a mustard seed. A mustard seed is the size of your fingernail. That's how small that is. But it grows into an enormous tree. So if you can start off with the size of a mustard seed of faith, as you water it, it will grow into an enormous faith. And when stuff happens to me now, all I say is, Lord, I know you got this. I ain't gonna worry about this. My children say, Mom, you don't even worry about stuff. I mean, I don't even know how to gauge it. How am I supposed to behave? I say, like me, when stuff come up, you know God got it. So what you worried about? Why are you worried? It's going to take some time, but it's going to be all right. It took us time to get here, and we all right. We got a roof over our head. We got food in our stomach. We got clothes in our back. We good.
That's right.
We good. So whatever it is you're going through, Psalms 20, the first sentence says, may the Lord answer you when you are in distress. I recite this every day. My mother gave this to me when I was a little girl. She said, whenever you are going to a meeting, you're going to an interview, you're going to anything that involves other people, and you want it to come out in your favor, and you want to see God's hand working in your favor, you read Psalms 20. When you're done, you ask God specifically for what you want, and you be careful because you know God answers prayers. And you let it go. And then you watch God's hand deliver what you ask for. And every time I've done that, it works. So I bear witness that works. Psalms 20.
Psalms 20. Remember that. Psalms 20. And, you know, you said something before we get into your book and how to get a copy of that, because so many people I know they're sitting here waiting. So something you said that somebody had told you that, you know, those are your children and they didn't look like anything was wrong with them. I'm like, well, that's because there's nothing wrong with them. they're fine. And that's what, you know, that amazes me that so many people, they automatically think there has to be something wrong. And it's like, no, it's not, because guess what? They had a mother who made sure that you had the forgiveness. You talked about things. It wasn't dirty little secrets. When you speak about things, when you learn how to let go and let God, things are better. There's nothing wrong. You're not the people that are broken. The people that are broken are the lady who didn't have enough good sense to know if she don't want to hear what you're saying, all she has to do is not listen anymore. I'm like, really? I would have turned around if I was sitting in front of you. Really? All you have to do is stop listening. Problem solved, lady. Did you really ask somebody that? Really? By the time I would have been done with her, then I would have told her to have a blessed day. You know, I'm like, really? I'm like, why, if you hear her coming on the radio, you change the station. If you see her on TV, you turn the channel.
And you know what? Really, now we see, she sees me at different conferences now, and because she's an official, they introduce her to me. See, God would deliver them right to you.
See,
so they she got to speak to me.
All the time.
She got to speak. Hey, Miss Muhammad. I say, hey, girl, how you doing?
I tell you that God works in mysterious ways.
He does.
I tell you, but yeah, people, if you don't like it, don't listen. And as you said, and I say this all the time, when I hear get a word from somebody in some country, like cluck cluck somewhere, I don't even know where cluck cluck is. And you know,
right.
And I'm like, where is this country? But when they say that my words have helped them to make it through another day, or I've stopped them from doing something and would damn them straight to torment, I'm still in shock and awe. And people that said, why are you talking about it? Be silent. Just shut up. It's over. It's done with. Just shut up.
Yeah, I get
I'm
that,
like,
too.
Really? I'm like, well, then, because my story isn't for you. If you don't want to hear it, don't listen. Problem solved. This show has survived this long and continues to thrive because there are people out there who need to not hear Maria's story. They needed to hear Mildred's story tonight. Because although our means are the same, it's all domestic violence, the way that we got here are different
in some ways.
But the way that we respond to it is what makes us who we are and why we are here together tonight by divine timing. And we can say, Mildred already said it. Don't waste your tears. I said it. Don't waste your tears. She didn't talk to him. I didn't talk to mine. I don't talk to mine because mine is still living and breathing. I don't talk to him. If I see him coming, I will go in the house. Don't want him to ride by, do his little slow ride bys. I don't know what that's all about. Don't care. I'll just go in the house and let him ride on down the street until last I heard his vehicle done broke down somewhere. He doesn't even have it anymore. That's what he gets. He could have had a few extra miles if he didn't waste them going drive bys past my house. But no.
Right.
But, you know, God has a way of taking care of things. But you have to know, ladies and gentlemen, when to let it all go. You cannot continue. At this point, once it's a part of history, you are now volunteering to be a victim.
Right.
You're volunteering. It's not your perpetrator's fault anymore. It's yours. Because you allow that person to have power that they don't deserve, they didn't earn, and guess what? Odds are, in most cases, they're not even thinking about you anymore because they moved on to new victims. So you're giving them invisible power and false power, and now you're a voluntary victim. There's a difference. I know some people are like, I ain't no voluntary. Yeah, you are. I'm the realist in the bunch, and you know me, I just have to keep it real. But the bottom line is, and I don't salt and I don't sugarcoat, I might put a little pepper on it, but I definitely don't sugarcoat. So we need to understand this, ladies and gentlemen, that it's time for you to forget. Well, you don't have to forget.
because there's lessons to be learned in every experience in our life. But there comes a time where we have to have that other F, and that's forgiveness. Once you learn how to forgive yourself, the people who hurt you, and move on, trust me, the sun will shine brighter the next day, the sky will be bluer, your soul will be a lot lighter, and you can move on, and you will be able to share your story without bringing along the hatred and the pain and all of that and want to get revenge. And no, it just tears you down. It tears apart the very fiber of who you are as a person.
When you're trying to get, when you're trying to get revenge or trying to exercise any type of response from the abuser, that means that you are still emotionally attached.
Yes.
And in order to move forward, the first thing you have to do is emotionally detach from your abuser. You have to begin to love yourself more than you love your abuser. You have
to.
Once you start the detachment, because if you are, as long as you are emotionally attached to your abuser, then you will be more concerned with what the abuser is thinking than what you need to do to get away or to create a strategic plan to get away. When I was speaking, and there were four people, women, that were following me at different conferences. I noticed that they were there. And so they each came to me at different times and said, "Ms. Muhammad, I want to thank you for your story, but you know, I've never heard that you don't have to have physical scars to be a victim. I thought you had to have physical scars because every picture I saw and every time I heard somebody speak about domestic violence, they only spoke about the physical assault." I said, well, the first assault to domestic violence is a verbal assault. It's what someone says to you. It's how they start to break you down and make you feel so that once they hit you, then you will be in such shock and awe and that you won't tell anybody because you've given this person so much praise, then how can you now go back and say that they hurt you? You can't do that. That's where the shame comes from. She said, "I went home and thought about what you said. I followed you to three different conferences because I wanted to make sure I heard what you said, but everything you said, he was doing at home. And I realized I've been a victim for 14 years. So I left. And I want you to know that we're happy. Me and my children are happier than we have ever been because I was a victim and didn't know it. He didn't hit me, but he made me feel like I was worth nothing. Now I understand you when you said that God created me to be a masterpiece because I don't let nobody disrespect me. I don't let anybody treat me the way he did ever again." I said, well, that's great. So you don't have to have physical scars to be a victim. And that is what I speak from because that's what I know.
Yes.
And sometimes it's hard to move from the abuser, even when he's gone, because you're still hoping that the person comes back. That's because you're still emotionally attached. You have to want more. You have to know that you cannot settle for crumbs when you need to have the whole loaf of bread.
That's
you need the whole loaf of bread. You need the ends of the bread as well as the middle. You need the whole loaf, not crumbs. Because sometimes that's what we settle for. As long as it's a piece of bread, as long as it's a little bit of crumbs, they can just throw some affection on me every now and then, just so long as that person is there. You don't want that. That's not what God intended for you to have. I would rather be by myself than to be in a relation than to be in an abusive relationship and an unloving relationship. I would rather be by myself.
That's right.
Because it's not worth it to spend time and energy on someone who is clearly showing me that they don't want me by abusing me.
That's right.
You got to abuse me, you don't want me. You can't accept me for who I am and let me grow to be the woman that I need to be in God's eyes, then you don't want me. You're trying to break me down to be what you want me to be, and then you're going to go and leave me to break somebody else down. You don't love me. It's just
that's
that simple.
Right.
It takes time to get to understand that, and it takes time to accept that, but you don't love me. That was the hardest pill for me to swallow when I was sitting in that shelter, that John did not love me. But once I swallowed it, it was on like popcorn.
Yep. So swallow it, you know, rest
it
down with a little bit of water, and you're done.
And keep it moving. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Because I had to stay alive, and I needed to find my children. I was not going to be concerned with how he felt about what I was doing or how I was doing it.
That's right. And we have a couple of comments, and we have another caller on the line. Victoria LaPrince writes, Romans 12:19, Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave the way open for God's wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. And that's right.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, that we just spoke about that. And if you, okay, you've heard it from me, you've heard it from Mildred, you've heard it from the Bible. I don't know who else you need to hear it from. And Victoria also writes, you have to know your worth, not the worth that someone else places on you, but the worth in which God has created for you. Psalms 139:14, I will give thanks to thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful
right.
are thy works, and my soul knoweth right well. I was waiting for somebody to post that. Thank you so much, Victoria, for doing that. Caller 3223 is back on the call query. Let's see if caller 3223, we have about 12 minutes. The last thing that we will do, people, get ready. If you have your Kindles and you have your information, you want to get the hard copy of the book, we're about to give you all of that in one moment. Caller 3223. Caller 3223, are you there?
Yes, this is Barry, and I really loved your interview. You were both so sincere and spoke from the heart. I just wanted to mention to you that the Lord has helped me write two books that I think could be helpful for many people in this situation, because it deals with, my two books deal with good communication with yourself, how to be open to your intuition and integrity to guide you through life and difficult situations like this, and also a book about good communication with other people, how to really communicate constructively. I guess sometimes if you have a partner who's destructive, like your partner was, you know, you can't really use that. But you know, when you have, you know, two partners who have good intentions, then sometimes good communication can work through a lot of problems in the relationship. But I've written about this, and I think it could be very valuable to many people.
Oh, okay. What's the name of your book?
Yes, there's two of them. The primary author is my late father, Dr. Max Hammer, and the title of one book, the one dealing with self-understanding, is entitled Psychological Healing Through Creative Self-Understanding and Self-Transformation. Once again, the primary author, my late father, Dr. Max Hammer, and the title is Psychological Healing Through Creative Self-Understanding and Self-Transformation. The title of the other book is, again, by Dr. Max Hammer, Deepening Your Personal Relationships, Developing Emotional Intimacy and Good Communication. Once again, Dr. Max Hammer, and the title of the book again is Deepening Your Personal Relationships, Developing Emotional Intimacy and Good Communication.
Well, thank you so much, Barry, for sharing that.
Sure. Tonight, Mildred taught people, has shown people what they need to do, and of course, your book can be a nice partner to show them how to do it. So again,
yes,
we always welcome good resource material and information. So most definitely, thank you so much for chiming in this evening and sharing that with us.
Sure, I feel it's a special gift of love that, you know, my dad and I really rose out of love and compassion for people who were going through difficulty in life to help them really understand how to be open to their own truth and how to let that guide their relationships also in their life. So I'm glad to share that.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're very welcome. God bless.
You too. And, well, right now we're going to, of course, for those, we do have some people who really do are right here ready to get the downloads of the books and things. So, Mildred, tell us how to get copies of your book. Talk about your book first. Tell us what it's all about. And then, of course, give us all of your contact information and where we can get our copies of the book.
Well, the title of my book is called Scared Silent. I titled it Scared Silent because I was so scared I didn't say anything, but I had to work under the radar so that John was not able to find me and kill me before I was able to get the children back. And you can get that from my website is BildYourMuhammad.com, and if you order it from there, then I will send you an autographed copy. I've also written, and it's about my relationship with John and how it transpired. I also wrote a survivor's journal, and that's what it's called, a survivor's journal. And what I did was I start the sentence, but you finish it. 62 statements, 6 and 2 is 8, and the number 8 means transformation. So you're transforming from a victim to a survivor as you complete this journal. I sent it initially to a friend of mine just to overlook it, and it took her like a month to get back with me. And I called her, and I was like, so, I mean, why is it taking you so long to tell me what do you think about this? She said, because I couldn't get past the first statement, which was when I first understood about domestic violence in my relationship, and she said, I didn't realize how long ago I knew it, and then I had to understand for myself why it took me so long to leave. I said, well, don't beat yourself up for that, because there was a reason, and maybe with you writing it down, you will understand it better. And she did, and she's glad that she did that. So this journal is in domestic violence shelters. The military orders it to go into their libraries for victims of domestic violence who need to understand and tap into the emotion that they keep inside for fear of telling someone they will be judged. Because you can't tell someone how you feel if you think they're going to judge you. Keep that inside, and you only talk to people who you know have been through it because you know they will understand, but all of us don't have those people around us. So that is another one, the journal and Scared Silent, and you can order them both from my website, MildredMuhammad.com. Also on my website, you'll see interviews that I've done as well as my events page to tell you where I am. So hopefully if I'm in your area, then you'll come up and say, hey, remember me? I listened to your interview on the show. So that's, and you, if you want to contact me directly, you can email me at afterthetrauma@yahoo.com. That is my email address, and I respond within 24 hours of receiving your email. And I'm also on Twitter and Facebook.
So I tell you, this has been such an anointed conversation this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, we have about 5 minutes. If you have any questions or comments, make them short and brief. before we go. If not, we're going to thank Mildred for being here. Let's go back over to Facebook. I'm getting some clicks here, so something's happening over here on Facebook. Ah, Victoria LaPrince, thank you so much. She's on it. She's posting all of your pages, all of your information up on our Facebook group, and I am posting it likewise over here on the show page. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, get the book, contact Mildred, let her know how you felt, what this show meant to you this evening. So many of you have already called in and shared. But again, she's on Facebook. She will be over here. You can leave your comments for her on the events page if you like, or you can probably contact her directly too. But this has been a wonderful, wonderful show. I'm so glad that, my goodness, there's so many comments over here. I think I've read most of them. I know some of them. Amazing. Thank you, Mildred. You are helping thousands and thousands. Thank you for your story.
Uh-huh.
And of course, they're quoting some of the things that you said. Make sure you can take your own medicine. Arlene Spann loves that statement. And there's so many comments over here. But I tell you, this has been a wonderful, wonderful show. I see that something else is coming through. Just when I get ready to come back over here to the actual studio, then I see that other people are still responding in here. But, again, we have about 4 minutes left. So, ladies and gentlemen, Victoria LaPrince says, thank you, Mildred B. Muhammad, for your transparency. You are a blessing to all women. And I thank you, C. Maria, for having her. Oh, well, you're welcome. You know, when I see the best, I have always made the promise to bring the absolute best and guests. Oh, that rhymed great. once again, tonight is no different. Thank you so much, Mildred. Oh, my goodness. Even for me, listening to your story, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, our experiences are so similar. It's just so amazing. And our responses to it are so similar. So, people, you've heard it over and over again. That's what Healing Through Hurt is all about. And my special guest this evening has been Mildred B. Muhammad, and she shared her wonderful story of survival, forgiveness, and success. And this is what happens when you learn how to let it go and forgive. Your destiny awaits to all of you. So as always, before we go, I pray each and every one of you enough. I pray you enough sunshine to brighten your rainy days. And I also pray you enough rain to make your gardens grow beautifully. And I pray you enough smiles to turn the frown you've been carrying around upside down. But most of all, I pray you enough strength and courage to face whatever may be coming your way this week and beyond. And as always, before we go, I'd like to remind you to continue to pay it and pray it forward. So tonight, once again, my special guest has been Mildred B. Muhammad. Get a copy of her book. Contact her. All of the information will be up on the Facebook events page. If you cannot reach her, you can always reach me at Maria Wall of the Wall Foundation, Inc.org, and I'll be sure to put you in touch with Mildred. My sister, thank you so much for being here. It has been an honor and a pleasure. And safe travels to you. I know
thank
you'll
you.
Be
thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Be well, be blessed, and have a great remainder of your weekend and beyond.
Yes, ma'am. You too.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
bye-bye.
You so much. Bye-bye. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, I'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., for the Sunday Morning Inspiration, and next Saturday at 9 p.m., my special guest will be Melanie Inspires Thomas. So until then, as always, be well, be blessed, and I will see you soon.
I get lost in your words, it feels so good. in my mind. Makes me wanna sit down and listen to you. I listen all night. The melody, the arrangement makes my body go so crazy. I tie my feet, man, I love the beat. It's the way the music comes over me. The emotions I get, I won't fight. Sometimes the music is sure to make you cry, then dry your eyes. You know when the music is the way you can hide. Fly. I get lost in your words. It feels so good when I'm hurt. Take my mind off of the pain. Love when the beat takes me away with only good music. Oh, 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 with only good music.
I tell Rihanna, please don't stop the music. Kaloran strum my pain with her fingers. I could really use it. Quiet storms full of purple rain. My Sharia more lovely as a summer day. I'll let the whispers follow Marvin Gaye in my headphones till the music starts to fade away. I give away my brown sugar for a bit of pop. If love really was a bullet, I'd have took the shot. Yeah. Now would you buy me a drink just to take me home? Put your game in a song just to make me moan. I like my Robin Thicke, me alone. A thug album, triple shots, that's the trait.
I get lost in your words. It feels so good.
I hope you enjoyed our program this evening. Thank you so much for joining me here on Healing Through Her Talk Radio. I am your most gracious, humble, and appreciative host, C. Maria Wall, and I will see you here tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. for the Sunday morning inspiration, where my topic will be the cosmetic Christian. So until then, be well, be blessed, and I will see you soon.